Danny and Dusty.
All right, my rock smashes your scissors.
No, not these scissors, pal. This is a special titanium steel alloy developed by NASA for the space program. These scissors that smash the Raptor smithereens.
No, not this rack. This rock happens to be kryptonite.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
No!
The Fan.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty on this Monday afternoon. Thank you for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it's on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AM, the fan, or the party people and the party animals on youtube.com/1080AM, the fan. Thanks, everybody. Danny's not here. Will Ortner is.
Hi.
That was unsettling.
Why is that unsettling?
That was a very unsettling way to say... Hey.
Hi. Should I have said, sup?
Yeah.
And then, like, give you a wink?
Yeah, now we're talking.
Sup? What's up?
Holla at your boy's a good one, Rust. That one is way better than Chow Belly. You know? Holla at your boy is good for you. I think that works for you.
Holla at your boy.
Danny is at Blazers Media Day today. We're going to try to catch up with him at some point if he's not blazering way too hard.
I saw some pictures on Twitter. It looks pretty cool right now. They're doing all their interviews. Scoot Henderson didn't have goggles on. I think he should always wear goggles.
Because they want to point you towards all the other flashy things so you don't focus on... Never mind.
I just want Scoot and goggles. Like, Scoot should really steer into the goggles as a former goggle wearer.
Yeah, that's right on brand.
Ooh, I would have liked to have seen that.
It's on my Twitter.
Is it?
Yeah, go look at my profile picture.
Yeah, little fat Will.
And guess what? Fat half mullet Will. And they wear transition lenses. That's right. When I got into the sun, those babies got dark.
Yeah, buddy.
That's a great look,
and
dude.
You're chewing on the metal like you want a medal. I feel
did.
Like that's it. You were like,
is this chocolate? No. That's Glenwood Little League winning our district, whatever. We went to state.
Hey, look at you.
That's right.
Look at you go.
Look at me. You go. Almost on TV.
All right. Almost made it to the regionals.
Oh, boy. Those were... Yeah.
That's solid. Glenwood Little League circa 2010. That's sixth grade Will Ortner right there.
Yikes. All right. Oh, Oregon rolls UCLA Saturday night in the Rose Bowl, 34-13. Dominant early. Five straight drives resulting in scores, kind of feeding off of what Oregon did against Oregon State. And I think that's one thing that everybody was hoping to see and kind of looking forward to was, all right, can the Ducks have a complete performance start to finish? You know, after such a good game against the Beavs in Corvallis, we can't say that it was a complete dominance from start to finish on both sides of the football against UCLA. But that game was never in doubt and never in question.
No, there was never a moment as an Oregon fan where you were like, are we in deep water? Aside from the very first drive for UCLA of the game, which they drive all the way down and they kick a, 30-yard field goal?
12-play, 66-yard drive.
That defense absolutely shut them down. They had half of their yardage on one drive. After that point, that defensive line was flying around. They were in the backfield the entire game. The DBs were latched onto wide receivers. Garbers couldn't find an open target. They looked great defensively.
At times they picked on Nico Reed on the outside, but I will say sometimes it was just receiver making a play. Teams are not throwing to Jabbar Muhammad's side.
I wouldn't. That dude was a lockdown corner, and he proved it last year.
He had two pass breakups in that game. One of his pass breakups led to the Tysheem Johnson interception. So teams are just not throwing there. They were forcing balls to Nico Reed's side, and everything was underneath and keeping everything in front. I thought the defense played outstanding. You mentioned that opening drive. That's your scripted drive. That is That's Eric Bieniemy, by the way, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator.
I believe his full name is Eric Sleeping With Bieniemy.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Chris Berman. But what we saw early on that first drive, we saw a lot of Kansas City Chiefs-esque manipulation through motion to create matchups, right? We saw the burst motion for the type that they used with Tyreek Hill a lot, where number three got a couple of catches on that opening drive. They went 66 yards on that opening drive. Will Ortner, do you know how many yards UCLA had in total in the first half?
In total in the first half, they were
66 on the first drive.
80-something. I know what they had for the whole game. The whole game's like 172.
They finished the first half with 54 yards of total offense.
Went backwards a little bit, did ya?
Do the math on that. 66 on the opening drive. The first half yards total was 54.
Now look,
they had negative 7 yards rushing at halftime.
I realize that like Ethan Garbers isn't exactly a Heisman candidate, but when you have a former running back as head coach, and you have a former running back and a potent offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy as your offensive coordinator,
mm-hmm.
how does that happen?
Yeah, they ended up sack yards.
You don't have talent.
Sack yards. I mean, Jordan Birch had a drive that looked like a highlight film in and of itself, where he had the sack, a tackle for loss, and then he got in on the play on third down and long. Didn't get credited for a tackle on it, but he was like downfield, like 8 yards downfield. He was all over the place.
Making big plays.
He really was. He was a wrecking crew. Derek Harmon continued to be, as advertised, the Michigan State transfer. He's got a big game this week with his former team coming to town.
This might... I don't think this is hyperbolic, but as an offensive lineman, to me, the best player on Oregon's defense is Derek Harmon, because he's right in the middle of that offensive line, and every single week he has 1 to 2 tackles for loss. He's in the backfield, and he can rush to the passer. When you have a 3-tech that can actually rush the passer and get sacks, or at least get multiple QB hurries, that opens up so much for your defensive ends. It allows Jordan Birch to be one-on-one against a tackle instead of getting chipped by a tight end, because they have to waste the double team on your 3-tech, mm-hmm. on your defensive tackle. Or in some cases, Harmon's big enough to where he is playing that nose guard position and he's over the center. When you can get a push that's right in the quarterback's face and he sees it, that makes him scared. That makes him more likely to move around in the pocket. That allows the other pass rushers to get after the quarterback. Oregon has a lot of sacks right now, but how many of them have been like schemed up sacks? How many of them have been Dan Lanning and LaPoy sending a fire from the boundary where you're adding a linebacker and a nickel coming off the edge and they just confused the other team? It's not much, and it's because
one
guys like
from Brandon Johnson against Boise.
Right. Aside from that, that's Derek Harmon, that's Jordan Birch, that's Uy Ungalale, that's Tatum Tuioti. Just winning one-on-one matchups.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And this was the upfront. They've been really good. And I said this after the Boise game, because you were watching that game. And if you go back, Genty is so damn good. We'll talk about Ashton Genty today.
Understatement of the year.
But there was something that was happening in that game that I came away from it going, there aren't very many backs who are going to be able to do what he did. Where Derek Harmon was jumping the A-gap so quickly against Boise, he was in the backfield, and Genty just has the ability to put his foot in the ground and just get through that. But he would weave around, and when you get that much penetration that quickly, it leaves a gap. It leaves a hole in your assignments, right? And Genty, I just watched, there's like 2 or 3 plays where Genty ended up like getting a big gain or scored on one of them, where I was going, I don't think there's very many, if any, other backs in college football that can do what Ashton Genty just did there.
Right.
And that cost Oregon dearly.
Well, he just had a couple of big burst plays.
Well, yes. No, I'm talking, there's one on the goal line too, where it was just like he scored and I went, that was a really good, everybody else was in their spot, and Harmon did a really good, it was almost like he was timing up the snap too quickly.
Genty's ability and vision to, his vision to see what's happening before him and then cut is why he had a big game against Oregon. Like, most of the time when you see big runs like that, it's because someone or multiple people got out of their gaps, right? You have a D end and an outside linebacker both in the C gap, running back hits it, yep. B, and so no one's there to cover. There were multiple times where you look on the replay, the Oregon D line, the Oregon linebackers, they're in the right spot. He just makes a couple cuts, breaks a couple tackles that I don't know if I don't know if NFL running backs, at least not the middle to bottom tier, are making those moves.
NFL running backs are watching him on Saturday night going, that's an NFL back.
A-Chain
said it. He's like, that's an NFL back playing in college right now.
100%. And so I think that at times people's perception of that defense gets skewed because of that game, right? Because if you look at it, the most talented team, the best team that you've played is that Boise State team. And it was close all the way down to the wire. So they look at the D-line and they go, well, they're good, but when they go up against a ground-and-pound offensive line and team, they struggled, which that's what the Big Ten is known for, right? Hey, ground-and-pound, we're going to beat you up. We play man football here. Mm-hmm. We don't throw the ball. They were able to do that because they have a special running back, and you're not going to see another running back of his caliber. The closest you will see are the two at Ohio State.
And Michigan's.
Well, yeah, Mullins is pretty. But again, those three running backs, maybe 85% of Genty. I mean, if Genty is playing in the SEC or in the Big Ten, he's the Heisman frontrunner right now, and it's not close.
And I think their offensive lines are going to be better. But
fair.
Travis Hunter is doing incredible things. Like, what he's doing is bat-ass crazy.
Yes.
We need to talk about that, too. Well, maybe we'll do, like, a Heisman look-see-loo.
I was going to say, good thing we got two shows.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk
about. But back to Oregon's defense, instead of just singing the praises of Ashton Genty, because he's really good.
Right.
That was a complete performance from start to finish. I know that there was a couple of runs to start the third quarter. UCLA kind of popped. They got back into it. But when you are up at the half, 28-10.
Really should have been 35-3.
It should have been 35-3. But when you are up by that much and the other team is running the football, you're gonna take that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Waste your time.
They wanted out fast.
They did. And I felt bad for Ethan Garbers. He had an ankle injury, it looked like a shoulder, bounced his head off the turf. He was getting roughed up in that game. The defense holding UCLA 1-10 on third downs, negative rushing yards at the break. You end up tripling them up in total yardage in the game. And I thought a twofold here. One is of concern, the other is not. But I think two things happened to Oregon's offense, especially in that third quarter. You saw them start to open it back up again as the game went on. But Terrence Ferguson going down and having the injury he got, I think that you look at it for targeting. I don't think it was a malicious hit, but that Brian Addison gave Terrence Ferguson, it was obviously everybody tries to hit somebody hard, but he didn't lead. I thought with his helmet, I thought he was going with his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
They did go high, and if you ask any receiver, I mean, you would probably say I'd rather get hit high than low. And they're two very tall individuals. Addison is like 6'6", Ferguson 6'6", right? So they both are up there. That injury, though, first, I love Dylan Gabriel going and mixing it up, because the thing I disagree with is Addison was celebrating over Ferguson as he's mm-hmm. lying on the ground, like twitching, and then one of his teammates is signaling to the Oregon staff, hey, we need medical staff.
Get out
of
here. Yeah.
And so Dylan Gabriel getting in his grill, I love that. That was great. But I think when Ferguson went down, you saw Dylan Gabriel locking onto Tez Johnson a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Because the two safety valves for Dylan Gabriel all season long have been Tez and T-Ferg. And that is of concern because he just has an innate trust in both of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they've earned it, right? Yep. Like when he's needed them in big moments. I mean, right now your MVP for the offense is Tez Johnson.
Mm.
He has a touchdown in every game. In this one, he has multiple. And that's why he has the 14 targets. Now, you and I were talking about this in the pre-show as we were getting ready. You know, how do the other wide receivers build a trust so that they can become that next person? Like, if Ferguson is out, we don't know if he's out or not, but let's say he's out for the Michigan State game. That's a great opportunity for Holden or for Evan Stewart to then take over in that role as like the second safety valve. And that can lead to more success for the team as the season goes on. But if I'm Trayshon Holden, if I'm Evan Stewart, I'm with Dylan Gabriel after practice every day. Like, how, what are you looking for on this play in the film room? What are you trying to get out of this play that we're going up against, mm-hmm. this look? And then I'm running extra routes with him so that he can build that comfort and that chemistry. Because if you can see those two take that next step, because Holden's had a couple big plays that have been on slants that he's taken to the house, he can do that on those deeper routes. Evan Stewart, he has all this hype coming in from his transfer from Texas A&M. He can make big plays. If you can get those guys on the same page with Gabriel, it'll then open up Tez Johnson more. Mm-hmm. But I also think you're going to see the explosive plays, which are just starting to come to the fold the last 2 weeks because of the improvement of the offensive line, giving Gabriel more time to throw deep. You're going to see those explosives continue to go up and up and up, and this offense reach its true potential.
The other part of why I thought third quarter kind of lacked for Oregon is they just wanted to run the ball and get out of there.
Oh, 100%. It was 10 o'clock. I get it.
They were just trying to chew this thing up. Hey, we're going to run the ball. But the offense sputtered in that third quarter. They found a little bit more life in that fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But the defense didn't allow a touchdown.
It was a great game.
The Dylan Gabriel interception, uncharacteristic, to say the least. I mean,
bad decision.
It was, and Tez slipped, but he was still covered. It's like the last person that you want to throw that ball to. You know, the guy who you just got into his face for just mm-hmm. standing over your teammate that he knocked out of the game.
Right.
Former Duck who's yapping all game long.
He was keyed up for his revenge game.
It didn't go well for him because Dylan Gabriel threw for 380 or 280, and they rushed for 150 on him. So it didn't go too well, and that game was never in doubt. But he got his pick six, got the only touchdown of the day for UCLA.
Right.
That was the most complete defensive performance of the night of the season, and Dan Lanning agreed.
Yeah, I thought our defensive staff did an awesome job, Coach LePoy and the whole defensive staff. I thought that was our most complete game on defense. I also thought we had a good feel for what they were trying to do too, and did a good job affecting the quarterback, stopping the run. If you're doing those two things, you get a great chance.
Yeah. I mean, they did both of them really well, really well. Next up, Friday, Michigan State, but it was a 34-13 win. Oregon, all-time undefeated in Big Ten conference play.
Wow.
How about that?
Few can say that. Yeah. You know who can't say that? Ohio State.
Yeah, they can't. Michigan can't say that either.
That's right. They've lost. You know? They're losers.
They are losers.
Not Oregon. Oregon doesn't lose. Not in the Big Ten.
I'm looking forward to that game. If you missed it, the Ohio State-Oregon kick time has been announced. It'll be a 4:30 kick on Saturday, October 12th on NBC and Peacock. So there you have it. Oh, look. Yeah. I mean, every other conference team, they've had a loss all time.
Every single one. That's right, because UW lost to Rutgers, mm-hmm. and USC lost to a team that can't throw.
That's right. They did do that.
Literally cannot throw.
They did do that. All right, hey, there was an all-timer, though, this weekend. Quite possibly one of the most electric football games that was also one of the most boring football games of all time. As the great Keith Jackson would say, this is an all-timer of all-timers. In Tuscaloosa. Danny Dusty on the Fan. What an incredible blowout and close game. That was what we saw. That's what we saw in Tuscaloosa between Alabama and Georgia. Number two versus number four. And it was a rout early in that game. I've never seen anything like it.
I turned it off.
So did I. I turned it off.
I was watching the Smurf turf. I was watching the Cougs.
Georgia was getting taken to the woodshed by Alabama. It was 28-0 in the blink of an eye. And it was 21-0 at the end of the first quarter.
Yep.
You had, and I love Kirby Smart after, because Carson Beck was getting roasted by his fan base. But there was, I think it was it the first interception?
Yeah,
where it was the receiver didn't do the right thing. Like, yeah. Carson Beck threw the ball where his receiver should have been, and it was like, pick.
Well, it was like the cornerback did the right read. It was one of those situations, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it looked like it was a read route, and the wide receiver and quarterback, they're looking at the defense, and he has a couple different options on where the wide receiver can go based on what the defense is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Carson Beck makes the right read. He throws it to where the guy's supposed to be, and that Georgia wide receiver went the other way. But this is why going into the season, a lot of people said the weakness of that offense was going to be that Georgia wide receiver group.
Yep.
They're inexperienced.
Their best wide receiver's kicked off the team before the year started because he can't drive.
And their main targets from the year before are now playing on Sundays in the AFC West.
You know who doesn't have a weak spot at wide receiver? Mm. Alabama.
Well, they have one really strong.
Oh, man.
Really strong guy.
That kid is bananas.
Ryan Williams is crazy. And, like, it's getting, like, it's like the, hey, did you know Travis Hunter plays both ways? Hey, do you know Ryan Williams is only 17 years old? Yeah, but it's crazy what he's doing at 17 years old, and people are going to get sick of it, but it truly is just absolutely nuts. That kid is going to be eligible for the National Football League when he is 19.
He will go through the combine at 19 if he goes out at 3 years. He turns 20 in, like, the end of April.
I saw a thing this weekend.
That's crazy. That is nuts.
And outside of this Alabama Georgia talk, I saw a thing this weekend. Cam McCormick for Miami, older than, what do we say,
Tremaine Edmonds.
In his seventh year for the Bears, Cam McCormick is older than him by a month.
But Ryan Williams is doing is crazy. What Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State as a true freshman, what he's doing is crazy too. Those two are freaks of nature on the outside.
They might be the best wide receivers in college football right now.
Yeah.
And they're freshmen.
They are freshmen. Man, but back to this game, Carson Beck struggled. Like, it was not a good game for Carson Beck. But not all of it was on him, but he was bad. Until the fourth quarter of that game where you saw how talented Georgia is. Alabama took their foot off the gas, and they almost paid for that.
Right.
I mean, it almost bit them in the worst way possible. And I was, like, I was heading down from the booth down to the field,
mm-hmm.
and Alabama was leading 33-28.
Right.
I didn't even know that Georgia had taken the lead until after the game was over. Like, Georgie was like, you'll never believe what happened. And I was like, what? And I couldn't believe Georgia came back. They took the lead in that game at 34-33. And then a touchdown late. Like, it was in a 75-yarder to Ryan Williams where he just outruns everybody, makes an incredible play on the sideline, makes a guy miss, and then just
spin move.
His sheer speed to get to the end zone. It was incredible, the nail in the coffin for Alabama. The fourth quarter was amazing, but as this texter, Vancouver Ford Texan, the only good part about the game was the fourth quarter. Yeah, Alabama beat the living hell out of them. That says everything you need to know about Kalen DeBoer as a head coach and the talent that they have at the University of Alabama. They are still really stinking good.
Well, and a couple things on that. Realize that this Alabama team is going to get better because most of their defensive players in the secondary are young. Even the guy who makes the game-winning interception, also a freshman, right? So a lot of these players, the more reps that they get in-game in the SEC, they're going to improve. So this is probably the weakest chance that Georgia's going to have at playing a weak Alabama. This is the weakest Alabama's going to be this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're only going to get better, barring crazy injuries. The other thing that I came out of this game with, Jalen Milroe is a worker that I don't know that we've seen the likes of. When he was with Nick Saban, this time last year, he was benched for another quarterback. And remember, at the end of last year, even when they were winning, it was like, well, if it's a deep ball, Jalen Milroe can throw it. Otherwise, he's only good if he's running. And what did Jalen Milroe do? He went and, I mean, obviously it helps when you get Kalen DeBoer, one of the better quarterback developers in college football. I think he's proven that now with Penix when he was at Fresno State with Jake Haner. Thank you. And now with Milroe. But Milroe went in all offseason and worked on his passing ability. And now is he a pocket passer? Like, is he going to dice you up completely from the pocket? No, but he's a much better passer. He can throw the deep ball, but he's also shown an ability now that he can read a defense and he can pick an open short route or medium route. And he's putting it on guys and balls that guys can catch. Then you throw in the fact that his running ability hasn't taken a step back. I mean, he was running away from the defensive secondary at Georgia. Who's ever ran away from the secondary at Georgia? And you have a quarterback that's able to do it. There's a reason why he's the top Heisman guy, and it's because he worked all offseason on his weaknesses, and he's turned himself into one of the better, if not the best player in college football at this moment.
He also has, he has some accuracy issues.
He does. He does.
But
it's better than it was last year.
He didn't on Saturday. He did not on Saturday. And Kalen DeBoer had the perfect game plan. We've seen this time and time again. DeBoer, in his ability to prepare for a team's weaknesses and exploit those in a variety of ways, is unmatched. His use of motion to simplify reads for his quarterback and his linemen, to be quite honest, it is truly amazing. And he is a phenomenal, phenomenal offensive mind and a great head coach. Nick Saban looked pissed. He looked pissed that, and it wasn't, they were like, oh, this is a guy who knows there's a lot of football left. No, he looked pissed that DeBoer was doing something that he couldn't do, which was put the screws to Georgia early. Like, Nick Saban won every game. Like, he won all of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Prolific coach. He had some of the every game was tight, though, and it was like, we're going to grind this thing out and, you know, the talent's going to overcome. No. Alabama just, it was like, it was the Crimson Tide, just overwhelming, over the top of Georgia early and often.
The big red wave.
Yes, it was.
I'll tell you what, when I saw that picture of him looking pissed off, I know in my heart now that Saban wanted DeBoer to fail.
Yeah.
He wanted DeBoer to come to Alabama and absolutely fail, get fired in 3 years, so that the Alabama faithful would be like, wow, we were so lucky to have Nick Saban. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that DeBoer won't fail necessarily. I don't think he will. I think he's a good enough coach that he is going to have that team set up for success, and they're going to have a lot of success in his tenure there. But you could see in that moment, he realized that Alabama was going to be fine without him. And it's almost like when your girlfriend finds that, you know, like, oh, that guy's, that Instagram picture, that guy's not as hot as me. And then you find out that he makes like $300K a year at 26. It's like, that sucks.
That sounds very personal for you.
I don't think he makes 300K.
All right. Hey, there's layers to this. Some would say five. That's our worst day on the web next on The Fan. Here's Rust with SportsCenter.
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
All right, there's layers to all this stuff, Will Ortner.
Five of them.
For one man, it is, and we don't know who he is, but we almost found out.
Well, we know his Twitter.
He's about to find out. boy, this guy. This guy was going through it. Saint Bill Snyder on Twitter. This is the man who, following a loss to Oklahoma State, said if Kansas State... if Kansas State loses to BYU, I'll shove a beefy five-layer burrito up my...
You about to find out.
Well,
Provo at night happened.
They lost to BYU, and the world was waiting, and the world was wondering. And over the weekend, by golly, he did it.
My favorite part is that he posts a... it's like a mugshot. Because he's got the side angle and he's got the straight on.
This is very disturbing. There's a lot of disturbing angles to this. One that he even said it, but then did it.
Well, he had to. He couldn't become 3-2-1 Noel guy.
Well, you know what happened, though? Kansas State beat Oklahoma State this weekend.
I bet on them. They were a best bet.
42-20.
They were a best bet.
I mean,
go Will.
They got the St. Bill Snyder bump.
They got the 5-layer bump.
And he had a Taco Bell bag over his head.
And they won in a beefy way. They used the O-lineman up front to run all over Oklahoma State.
He posted the photos to, I mean, good for him for doing
this.
Did
you see his intro video? Did you see?
Yeah, I did.
He bought it and he froze it. And then he has a video of like the burrito and it's playing Welcome to the Jungle. And he comes in.
Yeah.
This guy, he's so good at video production.
Well, he's also really bad at social media because let's go through it. So he posts the photos, as you said. And then he tweets out, "Wife found out I'm cooked." First of all, this guy's married?
You asked for divorce at that point, right? Like, you have to.
And then at no point, like, this guy hiding his emotions, he must be in a roller coaster in general as a human being. Because during the BYU game, it was just like, oh boy, I'm so cooked.
It was
like he's going through it. He's going through all of this for over a week, all of this activity, and his wife had no idea until after the photos are posted.
This is malicious fecal distribution.
I like that his
something tells me that his wife was sent this by somebody who's like, is that your living room?
No, he does it in the bathroom. But in my head, she like sees the picture and she's like, that looks like my husband's butt.
Yeah, one of her friends was like,
my husband's butt.
Oh my gosh, this could be your husband. Look at this. This is something your husband would do. And then it was, he's been doing all of this with, again, a Taco Bell bag over his head under a layer of anonymity, right?
Anonymity.
And then he says,
Well,
I told you guys this was going to be wrong. Today was going to be a day that was very hard for me, and I haven't slept a lot.
Hard for him, too.
He then tweets out after wife found out I'm cooked, the K-State versus BYU game is hereby christened the Burrito Bowl, and it will be.
Live Moss.
But then, when Alabama storms out to a 21-0 lead, a 28-0 lead, he tweets out, if Georgia comes back and wins, I'll do a face reveal and tank my life.
I love this guy so much.
Georgia took a lead.
This guy is awesome.
He then tweets out, oh, F.
I love this guy so much. He's so stupid. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
No one is dumber than this guy, but he's dumb in all of the best ways possible.
Yeah. 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 This is not good. This is not good because then he tweeted out, who does Kansas State have next week? He's got
I believe they have a bye.
No.
I believe
they do have a bye.
They're on a bye.
But does he mean this about the Colorado game? Because he said, if K-State loses next week, I'll put my balls in a blender.
I think that's why he tweeted it. Yeah, it's because they had a bye.
They have a bye. Wow.
But I would not tweet something along those lines about Colorado. Not that I think Colorado is good, but they're 2-0 in Big 12 play right now. They're frisky.
This man.
They're not as bad as they used to be.
St. Bill Snyder.
Do you think he has...
We all have a friend like this. I know... Two guys immediately that popped into my mind that I was like, yep, could see them finding their way into this. They're probably just really glad they didn't have social media.
Right.
At an age where they were. Actually, there's one guy I'm still pretty sure he'd still do it.
He might be this guy.
Yeah.
He might be St. Bill Snyder.
Yeah. And his kids would be like videotaping all of this, and child services would have to be called at that point.
Hey, son, come here. I got to go do this beefy 5-layer burrito thing. Can you videotape?
I could see all of this coming to fruition. Like, I could see it.
Do you think his wife found out because they have like a shared laptop and there's a folder that just says beefy 5-layer burrito?
No, she probably was like, he's on his phone a lot lately. I'm going to go through it. And then she goes through the photos and is like, oh, dear God. This is what you're doing in your man cave all night.
Is my husband cheating on me?
He was like,
no.
Well, kind of.
What, with a Taco Bell value menu?
My husband cheated on me with a Taco Bell burrito. Now we have to go to marriage counseling?
Actually, you know what? I'm going to go find me some cinnamon twists.
I feel like that's how she did find out. She's like, he's been on his phone a lot lately because the dude's phone is just blowing up left and right. He probably has been a little bit reserved. He's been pulling away a little bit over the past week, knowing that there's a beefy five layer that's going to have to go somewhere. And she went through the photos. She went through the photo roll on his phone and was just floored by it. Just taken back.
I would love to be a fly on the wall when she finds out. Like, she's like looking through, like, why do you have two calculator apps in your phone? I've heard about this on the news.
Or she like went through the garbage and like she saw in the garbage. God. She's like, why is this Taco Bell bag cut into a mask? He's like, don't worry about it.
Why are there eye holes in this
taco? She's like, I know now.
I'm a Browns fan.
Now I'm very worried about it. He's like, it's none of your business. Lay off me, Tina. And then she goes through the photo roll and is like, oh dear good Lord.
Why is there eye holes in the Taco Bell bag, sweetie?
Also, we don't know what she's into. Maybe.
maybe that's what led him astray.
She is the temptress. Do you think they have Taco Bell night at home?
Not anymore.
Or they do a lot more.
I think it's been ruined. I think it's been ruined forever.
Maybe that's what they're into now.
Ruined forever, just like I can't get a damn enchirito anymore.
All right.
Enchirito.
That's where you took this, huh?
Yeah.
That's where you went.
Yeah.
We're just talking about this dude, keistering a five layer, and you're like, you know what? I want an enchirito
right
now.
I want my enchirito back.
What is an enchirito?
Oh, it's a Taco Bell enchilada, basically.
Aren't they bringing it back?
Beef
they're
and
beans.
No, it was one of those things where they left it up to a vote to the fans, and it was a limited time only thing. And so, yeah, they brought it back for a limited time.
I was going to say, I thought they were doing like a decades thing, like the best thing in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
How old do you think I am, you little a-hole?
Well, that's the 90s one. I didn't say you were a 50s guy.
All right. We got stuff we need to get to.
Do you think he studied?
I hope not. This is Danny and Dusty on the Fan. All right, we went way long with our conversation about the St. Bill Snyder and the Beefy Five Layer. So
sorry.
We got to turn and burn here really quick. Danny Morang is done with Blazers Media Day. He is going to join us next to regale us with all the tales of Blazers Media Day in hour number three to start off. Plus, we need to talk more NFL, the top 25 rankings, and why survival is the most important thing. That all coming up next. Danny Dusty on the Fan.